It is Locked On Jazz for the 18th of June, a strategy session for the Utah Jazz and how to approach the draft and free agency. And Jeremy Wu of SI drops by to talk draft. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it more fun to be a Jazz fan as we move through this offseason. You can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, the Himalaya app, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Thanks so much for tuning in. Here's the plan. I'm going to do the opening segment, then I sit down with Jeremy Wu to talk about the draft. Kevin Pelton will join me for tomorrow's show, probably will be posted a little early. And then I'm out. And then I am out until after the draft, and maybe I get a show done on the 28th of June. But we'll see. That's a jet lag issue. And I'll probably try to do something for you before the 1st of July. But I'm guessing that a large part of what the Jazz are going to do in this offseason is done prior to July 1st. The more, after yesterday's show, the more I talk to people around the league, the more I think about things, let's do a risk analysis here and see what you think. So, the Jazz want to have a talent upgrade. Like, that's the goal. I think that there's a significant interest in doing it at point guard. There's less of an interest in doing it at power forward if you can keep Favors. Maybe there's a slight upgrade you're going to make on your personnel at power forward in some way if you keep Favors. I did it on the draft. I love Jay. His plus minus speaks for itself. His intangibles and his personality speaks for itself. His toughness. But I decided that I'd rather have a pure shooter. And so in the mock draft, I traded our pick to Sacramento for Nima Bjelica, and got that deal done. Largely because Bjelica had an extra year on the contract, as well as is a better shooter, and his next year is not guaranteed, so it kind of gave me more flexibility than having Jay as a free agent. I actually gave up our first-round pick and traded down to 40 to give myself more cap space in case I was going to play the free agent market, and I didn't think there was a huge difference between 23 and 40 in this draft, which is always kind of a silly thing because there's got to be a difference between 17 points. So that is either a good or bad move. I'm not sure. My other options, by the way, if you didn't listen to Locked On Mock Draft, were Etuan Moore or Doug McDermott. I'll be curious to hear what you think of that. So that's all at the Locked On NBA Mock Draft yesterday where I made that deal. But then I started thinking about it from yesterday's show and our mock draft. So let's talk about the possibilities here. Okay, so Kemba Walker, it's one of the most talked about possibilities. Is it really possible? And the answer is probably not, right? The chances of him leaving the Supermax in Charlotte to come to Utah seems slim. And he's being mentioned in New York and LA for multiple teams. So that seems unlikely. The next, Kyrie's out. Clay's injured. I don't know that we're interested per se in Jimmy Butler and all that comes with it. Kevin Durant's injured, not coming. Kawhi Leonard's not coming. Chris Middleton seems unlikely. Milwaukee, I think, is going to pay him. And why he leaves Milwaukee for Utah doesn't seem particularly clear. And now you have Tobias Harris. Well, Tobias Harris is interesting because I don't think that one's completely out of the realm of possibility. But the minute Jimmy Butler goes to L.A., Tobias Harris is staying in Philadelphia for a lot more money. Is every indication they have and makes sense. If Jimmy Butler stays in Philadelphia, I do think Tobias Harris is out. But now you're bidding against Dallas, Brooklyn, some other places involving Tobias Harris. If you're in charge of the Utah Jazz, what are you comfortable with at this moment? If you go to free agency on that list of players, do you think you're getting any of them? Truly, do you think you're getting any of those players? Do you think you're getting Tobias? Brooklyn, Dallas, other places being mentioned there. And not to mention Philadelphia, right? So what do you think your chances of getting Tobias are? What do you think your chances, honestly, of getting Kent Barr? Like, it's no longer the time to dream. It's the time to know. And frankly, if the Jazz have done their work, they have a pretty good idea of what, like, if we walked up and gave you a max offer on the first day, are you signing it? Oh, no, we're going to wait and see. Okay, great. Like, that's really helpful information. So if the Jazz hand Kemba Walker a max offer on day one, I don't think he's signing it. If the Jazz offer Chris Middleton a max offer on day one, I don't think he's signing it. If the Jazz offer Tobias Harris a max deal on day one, it's not clear to me whether he's signing it or not. If the Jazz don't get any of those things done, then what? If that's the landscape and none of those can get done, then what? Then you're into the conversation we had yesterday, which is Mike Conley or D'Angelo Russell. And if you're signing D'Angelo Russell, which is an interesting possibility, if you renounce all of your free agents, you have $13 million of cap space, so that's not enough. If you renounce Howell Neto, you have about $8.16. That's not enough. If it's Korver, you're at $21 million, maybe. And now you could maybe keep Faves. You get to $32 million when you keep Faves, when you suddenly let Favors go. Can you get D'Angelo Russell at $21 million and someone else isn't going to give him more? I think the chances are someone might give him well. The other one is, I have heard time and time again that D'Angelo Russell and Phoenix are tied together. Okay? I've heard that all throughout the year. Do you know if you give D'Angelo Russell a deal to Phoenix, that he's not going to Phoenix? What's your comfort level there? These are the questions the Jazz have to ask themselves. It's cute to be involved in all these things, but you've got to know. The Nets have to clear a little space, by the way. They don't actually have all the cap space, but I've heard the D'Angelo Russell, Devin Booker combo multiple times. So are you certain? And do you want D'Angelo Russell more than Mike Conley? Because this gets to the next point. If you can get a deal done for Mike Conley today, the rumors are out there, it keeps continuing. Do you just get it done? The risk analysis of what we just walked through is really extreme. Do you know that you can get any of these guys that we're talking about? And if you can't, and there's a chance you're going to end up with the bag empty, you don't have any guarantee that the Conley trade is still on the table. So do you get the Conley deal done? Because that's the safe route. And you know you're better. Ooh, and if you can do the Conley deal without losing Favors, does it make it even more appealing? If suddenly your choices are Conley deal and no favors versus Conley deal or versus D'Angelo Russell, but you got to give up favors, how do you view those two things differently? Now, I don't know if the Jazz can get the Conley deal done without giving up faves. But the rumors are out there. Tony Jones has reported it. There's a lot of things to it, and it makes it interesting. But I think that that analysis we just did there is why the Jazz may have to try to get things done prior to July 1st for the security of knowing they get something done. I'm not sure the Jazz want to have any chance of ending up empty. Indiana, after Mike Conley is real too, you go wait too long, they go get Mike Conley. Phoenix goes get D'Angelo Russell. Kemba goes to the Knicks. Tobias Harris stays in Philadelphia, and you're empty. All right, let's talk draft with Jeremy Wu next. Today's show brought to you by my friends over at Intercap Lending. Intercap Lending has done some really cool stuff. Really proud of Brock and Steve Carter and the crew over there and what they've been able to put together. Intercap Lending came to us when they first came to Locked On Jazz. They were just kind of moving in the market. Josh Romney had moved the company. They had two branches. Now they have 11 branches in Tooele, two in Utah County, Ogden, and Cottonwood. They've got their place. Why? Because they get deals done. As a direct lender, they're hyper-responsive. They embrace change, and they give you a great borrower experience. The direct issuer, in fact, they've done our loan. Steve Carter did it, and guess what? They still have our loan. Steve Carter is the Locked On Jazz mortgage guy at Intercap Lending. Give Steve a call at 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. He did our loan a while back. It was incredible. And now if you talk to all our Locked On people, it's the same story. Tanner Lacey says, I work with Steve Carter. It was by far my best experience with a lender. Steve was always on top of everything, was in constant contact with me and my builder to make sure everything was moving along great. He was always super helpful. One point in the process where he hit a little bit of a speed bump, not only did Steve help us get over it, he stayed until 8 o'clock on a Friday, making sure he had the paperwork information ready for a third party to work with. Definitely recommend Intercap, especially Steve, to anyone. Give Steve a call. Tell him you're Locked On Jazz. You get the Locked On Jazz corporate discount. 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Today's show is also brought to you by our friends over at Murdoch Hyundai. I'm driving that Santa Fe right now. Absolutely loving it. My wife had the other Santa Fe yesterday to pick up the kids. They just got back from ski camp. My kids were in Mammoth skiing. And she had the car just packed. That's why we got that car. It's safe for my son to drive. It has got all of the great kind of features, the safety features we wanted. And it just carries a ton of space. And that is exactly why we ended up getting the Santa Fe. I'm driving the newer one. It's got more safety features, self-driving, bunch of incredible, not officially self-driving, but it keeps me in the lane all the time, does amazing things. It's all over at Murdoch Hyundai, where they've got the longest days of the year, get the lowest prices of the year at Murdoch. The 2019 Elantra is $13,990. The 2019 Tucson, which they've redone, it's only $19,990. 0% APR on the Tucson, Santa Fe, and the Konas. So great stuff going on at Murdoch Hyundai, located in Linden, in Logan, and at 4646 South State Street. Jeremy Wu, Sports Illustrated, talking draft to continue on Locked On Jazz. Jeremy Wu joining us now to talk NBA draft. He's SI.com's draft expert. He's also our draft expert on the Locked On NBA mock draft. And let me just start with the big picture concept of this draft, Jeremy. I've heard so much about how it's a bad draft. Do you agree with that concept?
You know, it's kind of a weird label to just, and I know we kind of do it every year. Is this a good draft? Is it a bad draft? I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. I will say, again, every year, every draft, there are guys who end up going later than they should who are like, how did we miss that guy? And again, I think the point being, there's always value to be found in the draft for teams who are, you know, doing this the right way and, you know, get a little lucky. So, you know, I think this is a draft where I think there's probably less excitement about the lottery. You know, the top three, think are pretty set in the minds of most people. But then after that, it kind of flattens out. You know, some of those guys are going to end up being pretty good. So I wouldn't characterize it as a bad draft. I think it's thinner in terms of the talent gap between, say, like, I don't know, 6 and 20 or even 20 and 40. And, you know, all these guys could sort of go in different places. And ultimately, when that happens, you know, I think you see intangibles separating players a little bit more. I think you see, you know, injury concerns, you know, dropping guys a little bit more because these decisions become harder to make. And so I do think there will be a handful of really good role players who end up in great situations and, you know, somewhere in between, you know, further down from the lottery, 18 to 35. I mean, they're going to be good players who, you know, have big careers. So I think it's maybe thinner at the top, but I don't think it's a bad draft. Just if you want to, you know, in the definitionally bad sense, right? I mean, I think they're going to be good fits that we see going in the 20s and 30s.
The game's evolving so much. I thought Rick Carlisle had a really interesting quote this year when I was talking. He's like, people are missing. It's not that everyone can shoot. It's that everybody can shoot and dribble. In other words, everybody you can kick out to can now also drive. So that that versatile player, that, you know, DeAndre Hunter ran something, if I remember correctly, like, or maybe it wasn't DeAndre Hunter, maybe it was somebody else, but, I think it was, I'd have to look back at, it was Jarrett Culver. Jarrett Culver ran 201 pick and rolls this year at Texas Tech. Like that type of player who actually had the ball in their hands an awful lot or did more things. Are they more valuable than ever?
Yeah, I think it's a fair characterization. I mean, I'll say I think it's harder than ever to just be like a elite, like one skill specialist, right? Like, I think, you know, you saw more of those guys, you know, when it was more of a half court game, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was easier to be a guy who just shot threes. Or just rebounded, right? But I think now, again, players are asked to do more. I think the game is played more in space. It's more, you know, ball movement and transition oriented. And I think it's definitely, I think when you're looking at, particularly just even for role players, you know, being able to move the ball and make quick decisions, I think is a pretty, not that it's never been important, but I think it's more important than ever for sure. And if you're trying to identify, you know, guys who are going to be fits with the way the game seems to be going, I think that's something you have to take into account.
A few years ago, there was the Devin Booker. He ran, I think, 11 pick and rolls at Kentucky, and yet comes to the NBA and has a completely different role. Is there anyone in this draft who you've watched in college and you say, okay, well, that's great, but that's not how he's going to be used at all, and he's a different player in the NBA?
That's a good question. I got to think, man. That's a tough question. I think one guy who interests me in that perspective is Coby White, actually, just because, you know, Carolina had the ball in his hands a lot. He's sort of the de facto point guard for them. But I think the interesting thing with him, actually, is to me, he hasn't played point guard that long. Like, he was a two guard for a bit in high school and sort of has had to make the transition quickly. I think it's possible he ends up being more of a combo, you know, in the NBA. But I also think that type of guy now who can play sort of both guard spots and hit shots and move the ball is really, really valuable because you can pair them with a lot of different, you know, backcourt partners and put them on a lot of different lineups. So, again, I don't know if it's not going to be a Devin Booker, like, out of nowhere suddenly starts doing these things. And if you watch Booker, I think in high school, you know, he played that way. He was sort of an isolation type player. So there was some precursor for it. I don't know if there's anyone who it's quite as stark this time around, but I think that's a good example of someone who, you know, maybe he's not a full-time point guard. Maybe that's okay.
Top 10 picks, usually two All-Stars. They are whom this year?
I mean, is it going to be boring if I just say Zion and Ja?
I don't know. Is it? I mean, is that? I mean, being an all-star point guard's hard.
Yeah, no. I think if I have to have two picks, I mean, Zion is pretty easy. I don't think I need to explain that one. And I mean, I would go with Ja. I mean, I'm confident. I'm confident in Ja. You know, I was down at Murray State earlier in the season, so I think I probably have a little bit more just personal context for it. Maybe that's bias. That's, you know, or whatever, but I think he has so much upside, man. And I mean, I don't think it's out of the question that he ends up being the best player in this draft. And that's not to hate on Zion. I just think that, you know, there's possibilities where, you know, Ja takes off and, you know, has a great career and that type of thing could happen. I mean, he's so dynamic, you know, making quick decisions, you know, making quick reads, and you know, there's just not a lot of guys who have that sort of innate playmaking ability. And I'm not sort of turnovers. You know, I'd like that he's aggressive. They wanted him to be aggressive. You know, he's a guy, he watches a ton of film. You know, he's a basketball junkie. I think that's really all he cares about. And sometimes those are the guys where you see it pan out and quicker than you think. So, I mean, if I had to bank on someone else, it would be Ja. I think at some point he'll do it.
Two of the top 10 players traditionally never become rotation players in the NBA. It just doesn't pan out. Who's your most likely top 10 players to not pan out?
Ooh, this scares me. I would say of the guys that we think might be top 10 picks, I think Jackson Hayes is one of the ones that scares me the most in terms of, you know, maybe not getting to the point where he is really contributing a ton at center, just because I think, you know, the replacement value of centers is high now. And, you know, he has good tools, but we haven't seen a ton of him. You know, it was one season. He had some really good flashes, but we just don't know. There's so much we don't know just with his, you know, how he's going to develop skill-wise. So I think that's one of them that I'd be worried about. The other one I'd be worried about might be Cam Reddish, who I think teams also share these concerns where it's just, you know, why isn't he more consistent? You know, why weren't his numbers better? You know, I think you've heard people make the excuse with him where it's, hey, you know, well, he was adjusting to being the third best player on Duke. But, I mean, I don't really see an argument, because I would think that, you know, playing off of a guy like Zion, who makes everybody else better, and playing off of RJ, who draws so much attention, would help, right? So there's something going on there. I don't know. I don't know if he's a total bust, but I also don't know if he, you know, ever delivers on the potential that people are hoping for. I hope he does, but it's hard to parse that one.
Two numbers on Cam Reddish that are scary. One, he was in the 38th percentile of all transition this year. Like, that's a, to me, that number is just pure athleticism, right? So Zion's 92nd percentile. DeAndre Hunter is 82nd percentile. Brandon Clark is 90th percentile. Kevin Porter Jr. is 89th percentile. There's almost nobody else in the draft other than Romeo Langford and Kobe White who are below 40th percentile in transition finishing. And Cam Reddish had 130 transition opportunities.
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, I think people aren't talking as much about the issues he has finishing at the rim, but I think that's the thing where, you know, he's not the most explosive. You know, he can get into the paint, but then he'll get into the paint and have to try to throw something up. And I saw it happen a lot. I saw a lot of Duke this year, and, you know, he shot it okay. I think he'll shoot it better than he shot it from three. He can keep getting better at it. But again, it's just with him, it's tantalizing, but there's so much contingent on him improving so much. And again, I think you make a good point. Well, what if athletically there are limitations that we just aren't really discussing, right? So I mean, he's a guy who could, I mean, I think could slip depending on what happens in the draft. I mean, I think he'll be a top 10 pick, but I could see him falling out.
Remember, the Locked On NBA mock draft is up 5 days worth, hour-long shows. You can binge it right before Thursday's draft if you want to and get all of that in for you, and hopefully you'll enjoy that on the in all the different draft rooms and all the other aspects of it as well. Today's show is brought to you by The Store, 6200 South and 20th East. Just love The Store. I'm going to miss The Store on my break. The Store brings you the Mudslide Cookie. Holy Batman Mudslide Cookie. I got the email the other day from someone. It's just that great. But The Store also just brings a community feel and an energy to it of a local emphasis on good local people doing things for each other. It's in Cottonwood, 6200 South, 20th East. Stop by, check out the great salsas they make right around the back. You've got the produce section, and then if you sneak a little look around the back, there they are making all the device, all the salsas and other things. They've got a Utah cheese section. They've got the cotton candy from the Utah provider. The chips are from a woman we met at a wedding. Jeff and Scott just do these kind of things. They find the local people. The June pies come throughout the week with the meal pies on Friday, and you can always get the Store VIP package as well for you, and get the text messages for you from the Store on the Store VIP. All you have to do is text Store to 71441. That's text, actually, the Score to 71441, and they'll treat you like a VIP with about one incredible deal a week. That's all. So text the Store to 71441 and find out what amazing deals you can get from the Store, whether it's green beans or apples or something like that. The other day they had buy one, get one cake squares. It was super fun. That was earlier, that Easter products earlier, mini watermelons. So text the Store at to seven the store to 71441 and become a store VIP. Jeremy Wu, Sports Illustrated, with us talking draft. If you're honest about it and you stop dreaming, when you get to about 11 of a draft, 50% of the players become rotation players and about 50% don't. So if you're drafting anywhere after 11 or 12, you should be perfectly fine with just getting a rotation player. In that grouping, who are the players you're most comfortable will give you a Luke Ridenour, Nick Collison-esque NBA career where they, I was thinking of a Sonic draft where they both ended up, you know, I think, what were they, 12 and 14, both played 10 years. That's like an incredible draft to pull that off. So who are the players that you most comfortably feel are rotating?
Yeah, I love Goga Bitadze. I think, you know, I don't know if he'll be a top 10 pick. I think he should be one, but I'm going to put him in this group just because I think it's worth talking about. I think he's a pretty safe choice. Just, you know, being as productive as he's been as a teenager, you know, at a really high level in Europe, I mean, that matters. If you're talking about projection, you know, he's sort of more athletic than people think. I mean, if he's a more athletic in his canter, that's a pretty good player. you know, I don't see how he doesn't pan out to some degree, just because I think his feel is really good. You know, he knows how to play in ball screens. He's big. He's going to get stronger. He's tough. And, you know, I think he checks a lot of the boxes that, you know, if you look at some of these precursors in terms of, you know, European centers, I mean, Jokic is going to be a true outlier. But then, I mean, Nurkic is a guy who's panned out. You know, I think he could be that type of caliber of guy who, you know, ends up becoming pretty useful. If I had to pick someone else, I mean, I feel pretty good about Tyler Herro. I feel pretty good about Keldon Johnson. I think both those guys are going to work and put the work in to become, you know, good complementary players. I think Nikhil Alexander-Walker is another good one who I think has a chance to be, you know, a pretty solid guy just who hangs around. Those are some of the names that would come to mind for me.
We have a few guys that are knockdown shooters. So the best shooters in this group, you mentioned Kobe White a little bit already. He was one of the best spot-up shooters in the league. And if I just take catch-and-shoot percentile, maybe. You've got P.J. Washington was a knockdown shooter. Didn't take a ton of them, but he was in his limited amount. Cameron Johnson, obviously, was terrific in his shooting. Tyler Herro was pretty strong at that. Keldon Johnson was pretty strong at that. Which of those guys have a chance to add something else to their game that then really gives them the piece that they need?
Yeah, I think the guy I watch on that is Tyler Herro. I think he probably is better off the dribble than he gets credit for. I think he's tougher than he gets credit for. You know, granted, he doesn't have a great wingspan or whatever, not going to be an amazing defender, but he tries. And I think, you know, maybe 2 years ago when we were talking about Luke Kennard as a late lottery guy, you know, not to just compare them because they're white guys, but, you know, I think Herro could sort of maybe deliver a little bit more on what we had hoped we'd get from Kennard in terms of off-dribble creativity and playmaking, right? I think he can add some of those things to his game, and I think he's a guy who ultimately will sneak into the lottery. Teams really like him.
There's a collection of players from Grant Williams to Admiral Schofield to probably miss, who are all these kind of players that I'd say 5 to 7 years ago we would just say, you don't have a position, you're not in the league. Now they're that's kind of 6-7. They would have been the undersized power forward Byron Houston type. Now we switch so much, we move around so much, positionally are interchangeable. Which of those guys do you think actually take advantage of this new world and have success? Or is that just kind of heavy set body that almost all these guys I'm talking about have going to be too difficult for them in a switching game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky question. You know, that if we're going to talk about what's between her and anymore, I mean, it's not the same conversation it used to be. Just because, you know, how teams play can be such a big impact on that. I mean, I think if you look at a guy like Grant Williams, I mean, he's a guy who could be successful in the right situation. The question is just what is that situation going to be? I think with this draft, more often than not, I'm a little bit scared off by those guys. Like, you know, Grant, I'd be happy to take in the 30s, but I probably wouldn't do it in the first round. You know, Schofield scares me a little bit defensively. I mean, even if you go up the ladder, I mean, Brandon Clark is a guy who I think I'm lower on than most people just because, you know, I went and saw him against when Gonzaga played North Carolina. I was at that game, and, you know, I just saw some things there that sort of had an heart for me to shake in terms of, you know, him being able to play in a crowd. And this is obviously not a be-all, end-all argument, but if you look at the NBA Finals, right, and you know, the Warriors are dealing with injuries, and, you know, Cousins has been banged up, and they've been playing Andrew Bogut, and Jordan Bell can't get on the floor, right? And I think he's a guy who people are trying to make as a comparison for Clark. But, you know, you throw him out there against Toronto's front line, and this guy's getting bodied, and he can't really keep up in traffic. And, you know, being able to play in a crowd is hard when you're 6'8", and you're playing against guys who are, you know, 6'10", with 7'4", wingspans or whatever, right? So I think you got to ask the question of translation. You know, I know the stats are really good with guys like that, but I think it's, you got to try to figure out where the middle ground is before you can evaluate, right?
Final question for Jeremy Wu today. We've watched the NBA Finals with Fred VanVleet, with Pascal Siakam, with Draymond Green. You mentioned Jordan Bell as the opposite of this because everyone thought he'd be the next Draymond Green. Anybody in that ilk that jumps out to you that says, that makes you say, you know, I think this is the next version of the Draymond Green, the next version of the Pascal Siakam, the next version of the Fred VanVleet? Who's your guy out there?
I think the guy who would come to mind for me is Carson Edwards. He's a guy who I think, you know, deserves to be a late first round pick. You know, you watch VanVleet knock down shots in the finals and not be afraid of the moment. And I think Edwards is a guy who can do that. You know, I think he'll get into better shape. I think, you know, he's not very big. He's like 6 feet. So, you know, defensively, you just don't know what you're going to do with a guy like that. But yeah, you know, sometimes effort sort of bridges the gap. Carson's really smart. And he just, you know, again, you saw it in the NCAA tournament, man. This guy hits tough, tough shots. And if we're talking about guys who can really be dynamic playoff role players, a lot of the time that's sort of the skill that separates them. I mean, you know, not to hate on Danny Green, but Danny Green is a guy who's generally better in the regular season than the playoffs. You know, in the playoffs, he's hitting thin, so shots, and sometimes that's, you know, his main contribution. But, you know, guys who can, you know, bend defenses and, you know, stretch them in ways that, you know, can impact series like this. I mean, I think Edwards is a guy who, to me, has a little bit of extra value just because of that elite skill.
Jeremy, thank you very much for all your work on Locked On NBA, as well as all your other work here, and appreciate it very much.
Totally. Anytime.
That is Locked On Jazz today. I'll be back tomorrow with some Kevin Pelton stuff for you, and then I'm out. So thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate it. Go grab the rest of the shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. And for the mock draft, make sure you follow, or for the real draft, follow on Twitter, Locked On NBA Net. That's Locked On NBA Net. To follow what's going on, everyone's reactions on the draft night. Have a good one.